new CBS Monday. NCIS is back.
We need all hands on deck.
So grab your gear.
NCIS!
And join our elite team.
What are the charges?
Murder.
New cases to be solved.
Double tap to the chest.
Same caliber as the murder weapon.
And new criminals to catch.
That's the bomb maker. Where's the bomb?
A new NCIS, Monday, 9, 8 Central, on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
All things covered, listeners and viewers, and for the casual Tampa Bay Buccaneer fan, we have a treat for you guys. If you love defensive football, if you love quality sound cornerback play, we got one of the best to ever do in the National Football League. Played his entire career for the Super Bowl champions, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He is a Super Bowl champion as well. Five-time All-Pro, five-time Pro Bowler, member of the 2000s All-Decade Team, and most recent news, finalist for the Pro Football Hall of Fame, what we call Football Heaven. Rondae Barber is now joining us here, All Things Covered, Pat Peterson, Brian McFadden. Rondae, first and foremost, thank you for joining us. How you feeling?
I'm feeling good, man. I got to apologize right off the top. My voice is gone. I was yelling at the game the other day. had a long weekend. People were making me talk all the time. So if I'm a little hoarse, it doesn't mean my words aren't still meaningful.
Hey, it's a great time to be associated with the Buccaneers. So no love lost, man. We appreciate you joining us, man. Let's get right to the nitty gritty, man. Of course, you have a brother, you have a twin, but when was it clear to you that you were better suited to play defense? Because your brother played offense, played running back. But at what point in time for you did you feel like, you know what, I need to go ahead and play on this defensive side?
Hey, did you guys ever play high school or little league football? And then, well, probably not y'all. Y'all are great athletes. Where somebody on the team was just better than you? I was on a team from 8 years old till 20 years old, where there was a dude that looked just like me that was better than me. So, and he was running the ball every damn time. So it was clear very, very early in my football life that I was going to have to do something else other than be a running back, because he was just really good at it. And it really took shape, Brian, to answer your question, when we got to high school. You know, because in middle school, we both did everything. You know, we played linebacker, corner, both ran the ball out of the wing tee or whatever. And then we got to high school, and he started as a sophomore. High school was 10 through 12 for us. He got there, and I'm on the bench. I'm not doing anything. And then about three or four games into that year, our starting safety got hurt, and they put me in, and I've been a defensive back ever since. So.
Oh wow!
Out of necessity, it was out of necessity, dog.
Do Tiki hold any like bragging rights over you being drafted higher than you?
He tries to, but you know, at the end of the day, those 30 picks. So interesting stat here. He was the sixth pick in the second round, and I was the sixth pick in the third round. That same year, I ended up. I had a redshirt year, but I came out, and I'm always telling him like. Yeah, that number six is very relevant because he played 10 years. I played six more years longer than him. So I may or may not have done that on purpose. So.
Right. And speaking of the draft, well, you got drafted to an already great defense. Like, what was it like fighting for playing time as a rookie with you only playing one game as a rookie?
Yep.
And the Bucs being ranked the number two defense in 97.
Yeah.
What was that like?
So interestingly, Pat, that was the year that they turned into that defense, the defense that was pretty dominant for the next 10 years. It happened in 97. And you won't even know this guy's name, but he played in Arizona before he came to Tampa. His name was God, what was his name? I just forgot his name just now. I just had it on top of my tongue. Anthony something. But he was an older free agent, right? And he came to Tampa That year in 97, we had drafted Donnie Abraham in 1996, basically in the same spot that they drafted me. Donnie was all rookie team. I think he had 5 or 6 interceptions his rookie year. And they drafted me thinking I was going to be the same guy. And I was not the same guy. I was not ready for what it took to be a professional corner, even though I had great success in college. You know, I led the nation in interceptions my redshirt freshman year at Virginia. You know, I was all American. I was all ACC 3 times, all that jazz. I thought I was ready, but I wasn't ready. And so for me, it was a humbling experience, right? But I wouldn't trade it for anything. I wouldn't trade not playing in those 15 other games for the drive and understanding what it took to be a pro that I got my first year. And it really, you know, that sense of chip on your shoulder, you're not good enough, that lasted for 15 years, man. It's the reason why I credit that for the reason why I had success that I did. But that defense was good, man. It was Brooks was already there. Hardy Nickerson was our middle linebacker. John Lynch was really starting to ascend. I already mentioned Donnie. Warren Sapp was, you know, Warren already. Right. He was the most dominant defensive tackle I'd ever seen. We had Marcus Jones at one defensive end. We were fundamentally sound, but really aggressive and strong defense. And it was hard to find a spot.
Yeah. And when did you realize, you know, with some of the names you mentioned, you just mentioned that you guys could potentially be an all-time great defense?
I think it was then, you know. Uh-huh. I think, you know, the numbers started to speak for themselves. When you put other people's films on, they didn't look like our film. We were doing things different than other people were doing. Obviously, is when the nexus of the Tampa 2 came into being, because we played it all the time. And one of the things that people don't give us credit for on that defense, even though people say it's one of the greatest defense ever, yeah, is that we didn't do a lot. We played a lot of 2. We played weak and strong 3 high. Yep. And we played man. That was it. And then in 1998, or the end of 97, beginning of 98, Monty started incorporating all these zone blitzes and these blitz packages. And that's where I fit in. Because in 1998, the guy that was starting ahead of me got hurt. And, you know, it was my first opportunity and I grabbed it and never gave it back. He never saw his job again because I was having so much success playing inside. And then I gradually ended up playing outside as well. And that's how Rondé Barber started. It wasn't like, you know, we knew this guy was going to be great. He just kind of happened because of my opportunity.
And I remember last year, me and Pat P, we had Mike Tomlin on and we were talking about his Tampa Bay Buccaneer days. He was just secondary coach, by the way. Yep. And he had a funny way of just basically explaining the defenders you had the luxury around of playing with and guys he coached. He said those guys look like what they hunted.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And when he said it, right, like what? But yeah, when you think about, when he said, man, those guys, I had a bunch of guys, it was a bunch of guys that looked like what they hunted. You know what I mean? So when you think about hunting in the jungle, in the forest, whatever, you know, those guys were skillful, very, very athletic, fast. And that's why it all came together. And you talked about the 98 season. What about 1999, the NFC Championship game? You guys matched up with the greatest show on turf. And at that time, some people felt like that was one of the best offenses that we saw in the National Football League, but you guys did a better job on defense than anyone else against them. And get this, that team scored in the 30s or 40s, 13 of the 18 ball games they played. 5 times they scored in the 20s. You held them to 11, but you lost 11-6. How difficult was it to know that you did your job exceptionally well, but you still couldn't get the job done?
Yeah, 11-6 on a last second touchdown too. You know, it was a crazy game. If you would have told us at the beginning of the playoffs that we were going to see St. Louis in St. Louis and hold them to 11 points, we would say we would be in the Super Bowl. There's no doubt about it. That 99 team, that was when I think all of our key components were at their starting to hit their prime, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, it carried on for 3 more years into 2002. We won our Super Bowl. But 99 was the year when we were like, okay, we are this good. You know, you did it once in 97. 98, it was still a really good defense. 99, I was like, all right, we all got this. And really, because we did so little on defense, we were able to practice every possible scenario that offenses would give us. So there was no confusion. There was never a time when a guy didn't do his job. And if there was a time when you did not do your job well, you knew exactly why you didn't do it well. It was easy to correct that. Mm-hmm. So when we saw St. Louis in the NFC Championship game, you know, they were that wide open West Coast type of offense. There wasn't a play they ran that we weren't expecting, you know. Mm. And when you're only playing three or four defenses and throwing some pressures at them, you know exactly where you're supposed to be. Yeah. So, and at that point, we were humming pretty well. So, was it frustrating? Yeah, because, you know, we're of the core group of guys that were on those defenses for that long. We thought we should have been to two or three Super Bowls. We thought we were that good on defense to drive our team that far. Yeah. Unfortunately, we weren't, but we put ourselves in position to be there. And, you know, it was destined to be when 2002 came along, put it that way.
And that's a unique perspective when you talk about how simple your defensive playbook was. You know what I mean? And being able to only have a few amount of plays and go over everything offensively that you potentially could see.
Walkthroughs for days. Oh, yeah. My God.
Yeah. So I know that was beneficial.
And but no, speaking of obviously the years that you guys felt like you was getting, you know, to the promised land, but over the next 2 years, the team took a step back and lost in the wild card and replaced Tony Dungy with John Gruden. What were your thoughts at the time about the coaching change?
Yeah, I think we were all a little, you know, hesitant to believe that it was the right decision. You know, Tony's father figure, man. I don't know if you've ever been around him, Pat or Brian, but he's a man that, you know, that I'm always in awe of, just the way that he handles himself. He teaches you how to succeed. He teaches you how to fail. He teaches you, you know, how to deal with happiness and grief. I mean, there's so many superlatives to describe this individual, not just the coach, just the individual. And then on top of that, he's a great football coach. He's great at relating to his men and getting them to play the way that he expects them to play. And he's one of those guys you just never wanted to disappoint. So you mentioned it, Pat, 2000 and 2001. We had one commonality. We couldn't beat the damn Philadelphia Eagles. We met them in the playoffs both of those years, and we couldn't get past them for whatever reason. I think we lost to them four straight times before we finally beat them in the NFC Championship game in 2002. But essentially, the way we looked at it is that we disappointed Tony by not being able to beat that team, and it eventually got him fired. So you bring in John. And I think the hesitancy was warranted because of all of our success that we had had with Tony. But John came in with a different energy, dude. He's a different cat. And he put expectations on all of us. And we held ourselves to a standard on defense throughout all those years. There was a game we played in the New York Giants. We held them to 112 yards on offense, right?
Total?
Yeah, total. We lost the game because I think Trent Dilfer threw a couple of interceptions, one of them for a touchdown, right? So they beat us. Our standard when we went to our meetings on that next Monday was that their defense played better than our defense.
And hey, Rondé, do you remember your defensive – weekly goals, like you can't allow a certain amount of points, certain amount of yards. Do you remember?
I remember,
in Pittsburgh was like 15 or 16 or something like that.
Ours was if they score less than 16 points, we win, right? How many explosives we were allowed to? I think we only were supposed to buy like two or three explosives a game, no 100 yard rushers, all that stuff. But so that was our standard. So when John came in, he more or less put that same mentality, different because he's a different type of coach, on his offense, right? So from us, from a defensive side, we're like, oh, this is different. You know, John's expecting his offense to carry this team to victory, not just his defense to carry his team to victory. And he challenged us. John challenged us that year. He told us we needed 9 interceptions for touchdowns, or 9 touchdowns on defense, and we'd win the Super Bowl. We're like, wow. Okay. But his very first meeting with us was exactly that. I'm sure some guys have told you, look, we are going to win a Super Bowl this year. Okay. And we just bought in and went to work from that day forward. But different coaching styles. And I say it often, I say it tongue in cheek a lot. I think anybody could have coached us to a Super Bowl in 2002.
Yeah, a lot of people say that.
Yeah, we were a really good football team, man. Yeah. We had some requisite parts that came in, like Keenan McCardell, Joe Giravicious came in. Brad Johnson was our starting quarterback for second year. Mm-hmm. And we were ready to win. You know, Michael Pittman, you know, he was valuable. Allstott will still be an Allstott. We had Keyshawn Johnson, who we picked up the year before. You know, we were ready to win. And I don't think there was any holding us back.
No doubt. And we'll get to Super Bowl 37 in just a sec. But, man, we want you to take us through that outstanding game-sealing interception against McNabb in 2002 NFC Championship game against the Eagles. Yeah. Do you remember the play call? And what put you in position to be able to come through with that huge interception?
Pat, have you ever had one of those games, man, where you're just like, no matter what you do, whether you do it right or wrong, you're always right?
Oh, yeah.
So that was me that game, right? And I think once you get in the playoffs and people, you know, it's hard to explain this to people. I was trying to explain this on a Bucks.com earlier today. I was like, when you get in the playoffs, it's hyper-focused, right? Like, you understand that one play, any play, could be the difference in the game, right? Mm-hmm. So I went into that year, especially after having lost the 2 previous years to Philly, understanding that any little thing that I do right or wrong is going to impact this game. So we started that game, right? And again, we were very familiar with Philly, understood their offense, understood what they were trying to do to us. I think I recorded a stat in every single defensive category. Pass breakup, interception, obviously. I had a sack, tackle for loss, fumble calls, a sack fumble. There wasn't one that I didn't have. So by the end of the game, you know, it's a pretty comfortable lead. I think it was 21 or no, what was it? 21? No, that was the score. Whatever the score was, Donovan's driving down the field like Donovan did. He just always escaped. He found ways to extend plays and, you know, pump, pump, pump. And at that point, we're just playing hurry up defense, right? So you know what the call is going to be. It's either going to be a pressure. He's going to call like a 4-week pressure, or he's calling cover 2. Monty was not going to put us in any kind of 3-deep without pressure coming. So most of that drive was cover 2, right? It was, and we're giving up the space. Like, catch the ball in front of us, we'll come up and make tackles. Clock is our friend, right? Yep. More of the clock runs. Now, so Monty, whenever he felt team gaining momentum, he would call a blitz. Like, blitz is coming. So let's get to that play, Brian. So Donovan does his freaking miracle act and escapes from Simeon and, you know, Sapp, rolls out to his left, crosses his body, bam, does like a 30-yard pass down to like the 10-yard line or 12-yard line. And we run up to the snap, and Monty's calling cover 2, or red 2, so it looks like a soft shell. Mm-hmm. So in red 2, because it's a soft shell, the corners look like they're off a little bit. It could be a pressure, right? So in my mind, I'm like, I'm going to faint like this is a pressure. I'm gonna pretend like I'm blitzing through this B gap right here. And Donovan thought it was a blitz, and we're playing cover 2, and I'm a seam dropper. And so he throws a little hot to the seam to Antonio Freeman. And it was one of those awkward catches, right? You know, it was outside the frame, but it stuck. And 92 yards later, I'm telling those Eagles fans to piss off.
and do the Eagle fans still hate you because of that?
Oh, yeah. I embrace the hate, though.
Hey, well, our producer's an Eagle fan, so.
Yeah, big Eagle fan.
Yeah, you're a big Eagle fan.
And speaking of that, do you think that helped you a lot coming from the outside in, understanding what the corners are doing? Like you said, in the red zone, red shoe. Sure. They playing soft, but you playing outside, playing inside, now being a nickel, Now you're faking a bit blitz. You understand what the corners do. Now it puts you in a better position to make.
Absolutely. If there was one thing that made me unique is that because I played outside and then slid inside, mm-hmm. is that I did understand what the whole defense, what the whole shell of the defense was. Right. In reality, Pat, Herm Edwards was my first DB coach when I came here to Tampa. And in that first year, you're talking about it, when I was not playing, he's like, all right, I know you're not going to get the snaps at corner that you want, but I need some versatility out of you. He knew I played safety at times. He's like, go take some safety reps and practice, you know, be the backup nickel, the third string nickel, wherever the heck I was. So mm-hmm. By the end of my rookie year, I knew all five positions on the back end. Right. Mm-hmm. And so when I finally became our starting nickel, teams would intentionally put us in five personnel, right, and try to run the football. And we wanted to stay at nickel. So Lovie Smith, who was our linebacker coach at that point, mm-hmm. said, you know what? You're good enough to learn, smart enough to learn how to fit up these runs. Like, we can make you fit like a will linebacker in mm-hmm. nickel. So when teams try to run out of this, you can go make plays. That's why I had 88 tackles for loss, Pat, in my career. It was because I played like a linebacker in sub defense. You know, I'm blitzing, run away. I'm running through the backside A gap and making tackles for loss. And people are like, where the hell did that dude come from? Like, because most nickel corners weren't doing that. They were in there just
no.
in the corner. But man, I was talking about. Yeah,
that backside A gap. That's heavy. You got to be a big body to get up in there.
Well, and if you got a puller, if you got one of the guards to pull, you had to scrape over top of the center and fit on the other A gap. And I understood all those run fits. So it allowed me to make a ton of plays, man. So back to your question, Pat. Yeah, that understanding what the whole defense was supposed to do, it definitely helped me anticipate and make a lot of plays especially when I was inside.
Yeah. And talking about your plays, numbers don't lie. Listeners and viewers, let me give you some quick stats. We're not going to break down all of Rondé's statistics, but 15 career touchdowns, 9 pick sixes, 4 fumble returns, 2 kick returns. Why was it that it just seemed like you had a knack for getting to the end zone? Tell us about just that habit of always finding a way to get into the end zone.
Yeah, man, if you anticipate where the ball is going to be, you can find the ball, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of that was just always going to the ball. You know, I see a lot of players now, man. Play doesn't go their way. They're chilling. I had an interception my last year. We were playing Kansas City at home, and I was playing safety at that point. I played safety my last year in the league.
Yeah.
And our nickel corner, his name was EJ Biggers. He was covering, I can't remember, somebody in the slot.
EJ from South Florida. He went South Florida,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. Yep. You know EJ. Oh, yeah, exactly. So he has his pass breakup. The ball goes to the ground, and it's underneath the receiver's hand, right? And I'm hauling ass to the ball, just running to the damn ball. Well, I get there just before it hits the ground and snag it and pick it up, score, right? You know, everybody's like, no, it's incomplete. Like, no, I caught that damn thing. I promise you that ball did not hit the ground. And so I scored. But for me, a lot of it was anticipation. And really, Pat, you've done this. I know. I've seen you play, bro. You take educated guesses, right?
Oh, yeah.
If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But I'm pretty confident that I'm right.
Exactly. And
I would say, I don't know, of those pick sixes, I would say about 5 of them were straight ass guesses. Just, I think I know where this ball's going.
Yeah.
And I'm going in there and I took it. I had one, I remember it was against Indianapolis and they were in a hurry up. We were beating them by a lot. This is actually the game they came back and beat us on Monday Night Football. It was a crazy game. But I scored right before they started their comeback. And the funny part about it was I ended up on the wrong side of the defense. I wasn't on the 2 receiver side. I was on the other side because Derek and I got stuck, you know, in hurry up. But when I got over there, I was like, I know exactly what play is coming right here. We got a little bit of pressure. Peyton Manning tried to step up and, you know, throw across his body, and he hit me right in the face. I scored. But it was really just about understanding what was coming and then just finding a way to hustle your ass to the ball. It usually finds you when you do it.
Yeah. Well, you did it well. You did it well. One of the best all around corners I know, me watching the game, man, just number 20 was hell.
Well, I know a lot of my coaches like to use it as an example, but be honest with you, it was the only way I could get on the football field. That's the way I looked at it. Like I was always waiting for somebody to take my job because I'd taken somebody's job to get my chance. So it's also a reason why I played hurt. It's a reason why I didn't miss any games. I just didn't want to see anybody else do my job. I thought I could do it better.
Let's talk about the performance in the Super Bowl against the Raiders. Yeah. The way you guys dominated the Raiders offense, most people tend to forget that Rich Gannon was the league MVP that year.
Yeah.
But, you know, why did you guys have so much success against the league MVP, Rich Gannon, in the Raiders offense?
Well, I think Charlie Garner may have been the damn runner-up for the MVP that year.
Yeah, Charlie Garner.
They had Tim Brown and Jerry Rice at wide receivers. I think Jerry Porter was their other wide receiver, young guy from West Virginia.
West Virginia.
Yep. So they were talented at offense, man. Rich Gannon was MVP for a reason. But we expected a whole bunch of Charlie Garner in that game. Because if there was one area where we weren't great, it was run defense. I mean, we were, you know, we led the league in interceptions that year. I think we top two or three in pass defense. I'm not sure where we were ranked overall, but we were a great pass defense because we had great rushers up front. Simeon and Warren and, you know, Booger earlier in that year. But we had some really good pass rushers. So it made our job easier on the back ends. But we get to Oakland, or I guess San Diego, to play Oakland in that Super Bowl. And you know, they come out and they think they're going to throw the ball all over us. That's literally was their game plan. We think we have better athletes than your corners and safeties, and we're going to throw the ball all over you. And it by the second quarter, I think we already had three interceptions, two of them for touchdowns.
Yeah.
And Dwight Smith, you know, he was our outside nickel corner that year. When I went inside, and he had two interceptions for touchdowns, man. It was, their game plan should have been, let's use Charlie Garner as much as we can in a run game and try to shorten this team against this really good defense. But hubris is a mother, man. They thought they were going to go out and dominate the best pass defense in the league. And they weren't able to do it. And we didn't do anything complicated. And again, I told you guys earlier, because we didn't do a lot. We had so much time to study route combinations and situational ball. That's essentially what it was. We had so much time to study situational ball and route combinations that we kind of knew it was coming. I was watching the halftime show on TV. And in the locker room during that 30-minute halftime, because
you were watching the halftime show.
Yeah, Shania Twain, I think it was somebody. I can't remember who it was. May have been Gwen Stefani. I can't remember who it was.
What was the halftime score again?
Game over.
Wow.
I don't know.
With that being said, what was your greatest memory of you getting to your first Super Bowl then?
Yeah.
Well, that Super Bowl was weird, Pat, because it was the only year that I can recall where there was no bye week. So we got on a plane from Philly, flew home that night, got on a plane Monday morning and went to the Super Bowl site. So it was hectic. You know, it wasn't like, you know, you get all that hype and pomp and all that circumstance that's now surrounding the Super Bowl. We get to damn San Diego and everybody's expecting the Philadelphia Eagles to be there. we got to get ready for the Bucks. We got to change all our stuff. But I think we appreciated it. after the fact more than during. You know, just the nature of the accomplishment, it starts to weigh on you once you, you know, once you, you know, once you realize it's over. When Derrick Brooks intercepted that last pass, that was our last touchdown of that game.
Yeah.
That's when everybody was like, this is done. You know, cause they made a little bit of a comeback. I think Jerry had a couple of catches late in that game, maybe even a touchdown. But that last interception for a touchdown was hey man, dream accomplished. We actually did it. And that interception, that touchdown that Derrick scored was our ninth score on defense that year.
Wow.
So, wow.
So you got to that point.
It was kind of prophetic, you know, it was, we were that team, you know, and it's easy to say it's destiny, you know, after the fact, but
right.
You know, in our minds it was, so.
Wow. So y'all got nine. Hey, Pat P, you still active. So this upcoming season, bro, when y'all have y'all first meeting in training camp or OTAs, when the team come together.
We need nine touchdowns.
We get nine touchdowns. We playing in the Super Bowl. We winning the champ. No. I'm sorry. What did Gruden say? Gruden said, we hit nine, we win in the Super Bowl.
Winning the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Pat P, that's the standard. That's the standard. And talking about Derrick Brooks being able to get that ninth touchdown for you guys defensively, D. Brooks, Warren Sapp, John Lynch are now all in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. How do you feel, Rondé, about potentially getting that call or knock on your door this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody who's a finalist, you feel like it's your year. Every time you get nominated, I mean, there's 352 Hall of Famers. It's not a big number, man.
Yeah.
You know, it's considering the number of people that play every single year, 1,800 players in the league every single year, 1,800 plus players in the league every single year. And over the course of, you know, the entirety of the league's existence, only 350 some are in the Hall of Fame. So, yeah. You know, to feel like that you're special, being nominated is special. Becoming a semifinalist is special. I've been a semifinalist all 5 years I've been eligible. So I feel like my time is coming. Yeah, I was a finalist for the first time last year. Second year as a finalist, you start to get that sense that the writers and the voters do appreciate what you have out there. And I'm confident. I mean, last year, my first year as a finalist was hard. I mean, Peyton Manning, Charles Woodson, Calvin Johnson. I'm somewhere underneath all three of those, right? And then Lynch had been waiting for 8 years. Faneca had been waiting a long time, maybe just as long as Lynch had. So it wasn't my time. But you know, to answer your question, I feel like my time is here. I think people have started to appreciate the body of my work, the value of the resume, the fact that no corner will probably be able to do what I ever did. Because the league has changed so much. Mm-hmm. When I first started blitzing a quarterback, they were like, where the hell did that dude come from? You know, how did he get through that B gap? How did he get around the edge? You know, because the schemes were kind of new. Jimmy Johnson in Philadelphia was doing the same thing as we were doing.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mastered it. I dominated. I had 28 career sacks. You know, my only other peer in that category is Charles, who played outside and inside corner. He ended up with 20 his last year, his 17th year. He got his 20th sack. And it's impossible to do. I just don't see it happening anymore. And then you tack on the fact that 47 interceptions, you know, fourth most non-offensive touchdowns in the history of the NFL. Devin Hester, Deion Sanders, Rod Woodson, Rondé Barber. Yeah.
Hey. Hey, Pat P, you hear him laying down the law?
Hey, man.
Hey, stat check. Y'all better wake up, voters.
Baby.
Listen, 28 sacks. People don't know how hard it is getting 5 sacks in your career as a defensive back. Like 28.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a good run, man. And I wanted to get the 30, but Shiano moved me to safety my last year, and I didn't get to blitz a damn quarterback as much. So.
But speaking of you and all these different positions, you hold a record for 215 consecutive starting games.
Yep.
Like, what was the key to your longevity with you playing all these different positions and blitz, but having to tackle, cover receivers? Yep. What was your key?
Yeah, that's a great question, Pat. And actually, I think it was 215 consecutive starts, but I played in 245 straight games. So from my second year, the start of 98 until 2012, I didn't miss a game. I didn't start all those during that 98 and I missed the start in 99. That's why the number is off. But the key, I mean, obviously I'm blessed. I mean, you can't deny God's blessing sometimes, not having any major injury. I had some soft tissue stuff. I had broke my forearm, but I broke my forearm the last game of a season. Like I would have missed the game then.
Yeah.
I broke a thumb that I played through. You know, there was a lot of injuries that hurt that didn't prevent me from playing. But I took care of myself. Obviously, the modalities that you use. A lot of these young guys ask me how, you know, hey, Goat, how do you stay healthy for that long? I was like, take care of yourself, right? You're making a lot of money. Most of that investment needs to go into your body. It has to. Because if you don't take care of yourself, it's not going to happen just by luck. You know, a lot of people, oh, you're lucky, never have gotten hurt. I was like, well, you know, the stuff I did on Monday and Tuesday and then Thursday and Friday probably went a long way in helping me stay healthy on Sunday. I think guys, young guys need to understand that. It's not just showing up at the building, you know, going through the motions, going through practice, and, you know, maybe getting the hot tub or whatever. I mean, it's got to be dedicated work. And there's different plans for different people. John Lynch taught me that very early in my career. He used a method that I didn't use, but it was a good method. And it gave me the idea that I need to find the modalities that make my body feel best on Sundays.
Yeah. Well, it's true, man. It all worked out well for you because that number is phenomenal. And you need to write a book about longevity in the National Football League, not just for defensive backs, but all positions, because that's something that a lot of people are striving for and they're falling short. A few questions regarding the current day Tampa Bay Buccaneers before we transition to the superlative part of the show. Do you believe this current group of guys with the Buccaneers, can they repeat currently in the second round of the playoffs, getting ready to have another home playoff game? Do you think they have what it takes to be able to repeat as champions once again?
Absolutely. If not just because of Tom Brady. Yes. The guy makes a difference. I know they're beat up. You know, Antonio Brown's no longer with the team. They lose Chris Godwin about a month ago. It looks like that wealth of offensive talent that they had is somewhat diminished. But when I put the film on, I watch all their film. Gronk is still dominant. Mm-hmm. Mike Evans is dominant. And I think people forget how good Mike Evans is as a wide receiver. He's second in the league this year in touchdown receptions to Cooper Kupp. He was two behind him. He had another 1,000-yard season. You know, he did all this quietly. I mean, he didn't get any post, you know, end of season recognition, really. Another great, great, great season. He just has so many other talented players around him that sometimes his greatness gets muted a little bit.
Yeah.
I think having Tom Brady makes everybody else better. So it doesn't matter if it's Cyril Grayson, who showed up a couple of weeks ago at wide receiver making big plays, whether it's Rashad Perriman, who has been needed these past couple of games to make plays, whether it's Tyler Johnson, second-year wide receiver out of Minnesota, showing up to make plays. Tom Brady makes those guys better. Mm-hmm. But in reality, Bryant, the reason this team won the Super Bowl last year is because the last month and a half of the year, their defense was the best defense in football.
Yeah.
And there's no doubt about it that the Bucs were Super Bowl champions because of the way their defense played down the stretch. And is this the same defense? No, they're not playing nearly as well as they were at the end of the season last year, but they are getting healthy. You know, they missed Shaq Barrett and JPP for about 4 weeks this year. Levante David hurt his foot. He was out for about a month. secondary hasn't started the same four guys. You get this, haven't started the same four guys yet this season. So are they good enough? Yes, because they're getting healthy, and you want to be healthy at this time of year. And so I'm encouraged by them. I thought they did a great job last week against a pretty dang good run team in Philly. Made them one dimensional. When they had to pass the ball, they absolutely couldn't do it. And when you can't keep up with Tom Brady on offense, you're just not going to win. Now they're going to play this week against either Arizona or LA.
Yep.
I'm not going to lie. Both those teams scared me.
No question.
Because Kyler is a magician, and LA has the firepower, against the secondary, our secondary, this Buck secondary has been a little up and down roller coaster, this season. But there's no reason they can't hang in every game. So until they lose, they're my favorite. They're Super Bowl champs for a reason.
Gotcha. How long do you think Tom Brady will play?
That's the question of the week, man. Like, so what do you think? So you go back-to-back championships and you say, I'm out. Peace. I did it there. I did it here. I'm out. Or he loses and says, you know what? I need to come back and make this right, and I'm going to go try to win next year. I don't know. I have no idea. When I first met Tom, when he came down here, he joined a golf club that I'm a member at, and I asked him, I was like, man, you're 43 years old, dude. How long are you playing for? First of all, how are you playing this long, and how long are you going to play? And he's like, well, I'm committed for two, right? And that was 2 years ago. And I think he probably has one more in him, but it depends on his decision after they go out, whether they go out as Super Bowl champions or whether they go out, you know, in the divisional or championship round. I don't know. I'd like to see him keep playing because I don't know a guy that can produce like him. Definitely not in college football right now.
Yeah, I think it has to feel and seem appealing to him, regardless if he wins. If he wins again and they add another dynamic playmaker to the offense and fires him up, like, oh man, I got another chance to be great again. Like the personnel is improving.
Yeah.
Like, you know what? Oh, we got another shot.
Run it back.
Yeah, run it back, man. Look,
you know, right?
Yeah. He's like running back last year because everybody was returning. Everybody was signing back. So he's like, man, look what we got coming back. Running back. But if the personnel is kind of starting to diminish a little bit, he might not be inclined to swing again at it. But who knows? The man loves football. He can't question that. And when he's dialed in, he's dialed in. So we have to wait and see.
Yeah, I think part of that question will be answered by the way that Jason Light, the general manager, and Mike Greenberg, their cap guy, manage their cap. They got some cap issues, buddy.
No question.
They're trying to sign long-term deals with some key players. Vita Vea just signed, defensive tackle just signed this week. But, you know, Chris Godwin was franchise tag last year, and he was going to hit the market until he blew out his knee, which was very unfortunate. But you got to make a decision. You got to make a decision on him. You got to make a decision on Ronald Jones, backup running back. You got to make a decision on Leonard Fournette, starting running back. You got some offensive linemen that are going to be looking at contract extensions. You know, it's Carlton Davis. Carlton Davis is the best DB, and he's
looking to get paid.
Yeah, you know how hard it is to keep a team together.
Yeah,
It's generally the reason why Super Bowl teams fall apart is because guys go. They just go.
Yeah. All right. Well, Rondé, we're going to transition to our superlative part of our show. We're going to hit you with rapid fire questions. We want honest, unbiased answer. All right. Start.
Don't ask me if Patrick Peterson was the best cover corner in the league, because I'll say yes.
Okay. I'm going to throw, just because you mentioned that, I'm going to throw something into you that's not even in the rundown. But start, sit, cut, right? Okay. Your championship defense, 2000 Ravens, 85 Bears.
Ooh, God, that man. And this is not rapid fire because I got to give you a little bit of an explanation here.
Okay, it's fine.
I watched the Ravens beat the bejesus out of Tiki in the Super Bowl that year.
Yeah. That was in Tampa, by the way.
Yeah, in Tampa. Oh. They beat the Giants. Mm-hmm. Our defense was pretty stellar, but no, it's 85 Bears.
So you start in the 85 Bears. Who you sit in and who you cut it?
Start, sit, and what was the other one?
Start, sit, and cut. So you're going to start one, you're going to sit one, and you cut. Cutting the Ravens. Okay, yes. That's fair.
Best quarterback you ever played with?
Cornerback?
Quarterback.
Quarterback that I played with. Oh, man. Dude, I played with like 1,000. go look at me quarterbacks I played with in my career.
You did.
Like Chris Sims, Bruce Gronkowski, Brian Greasy, Brad Johnson, Trent Dilfer, Sean King.
Wow. You got to pick one. Who the best?
All right. Who's the best? The most talented, and I don't think this is without question, he didn't pan out, but the most talented by far was Josh Freeman.
Josh Freeman, Kansas State.
That kid was going to be great. And he had what it took.
What
physically,
happened?
Life.
Yeah.
Life. Yeah. It's, dude, football life. Yeah, football life balance is not easy, bro.
Yeah.
Especially for a quarterback.
It's gotten a lot of people out of the league. He just didn't manage it well, dude. It's unfortunate because he was talented.
Josh Freeman. I forgot about that name. Yeah. First rounder.
I remember he made that picture of he remade that Michael Jackson picture.
Oh my god!
What Michael Jackson picture? I think
I'm going to Google. Hey, there is an interconnected web with a Google search in it. Go look it up, dude.
I got to check that one out. I got to check that one out. I'm totally forgetting that one. All right, personal stat in the NFL you're most proud of.
Probably my 28 sacks. Because it's a unique number for my position. Seconded probably by the number of tackles that I made. Mm-hmm. But in Bucs history, I'm second all-time leading tackler. I don't know a corner in NFL history that has more tackles than I did. I mean, granted, I played 16 years, but I took a lot of pride in my ability to get ball carriers down. And it's not like I'm big. I mean, Pat's seen me. I'm 5'10" and a half, 5'9" and a half, claiming 5'10", 185 pounds. I love tackling, man. It was the wrestler in me. I was a wrestler growing up, so
yeah.
I think that had a little bit to do with it.
Okay, I can see that. Let me see. Favorite regular interception? You didn't ask that. Favorite interception. Of your career, regular season interception.
Regular season? It's funny. Yeah. I have a couple because I remember one time I climbed the ladder against Pittsburgh and went up and got a ball over Plaxico.
Okay.
Climbed the ladder.
5'9", all 5'9" of me.
Yeah.
I had another one in the game where I got my 20th sack, right? I got my 20th sack against Carolina Panthers. But I had an interception in that game in the red zone. They were going in to score in the red zone where I kind of went over Ricky Pearl's back, tipped it up, intercepted it, turned the ball up. It was a pretty cool looking interception. I got Aaron Brooks twice in my career. Mm-hmm. So any one of those. And one of them was down at your stadium at LSU after Katrina. But my favorite one was it was in 2006. The Bucks just made me do a film session on this the other week. It was against Philly, and I was ardent film studier in PP, and I understood what routes were coming at me and what routes weren't coming at me. Mm-hmm. And Donovan gave me play action pass, and he play actioned away from me, so I saw his back, I saw his numbers. There's about two routes that he can run. He can run a 15-yard comeback. He can run a 15-yard in-break and dig. Yeah. One route he's not running is a takeoff. Mm-hmm. So I was a technician, pedal, kick 180, and then just dropped my foot in the ground and stole this comeback and scored. And it was it was knowledge, technique, and then skill kind of marrying themselves together. And it was just like, it was a perfect interception for a touchdown. And it was just cool. It was, I love it. I think about it all the time. I think about, when you hit that back foot and your hips just go,
And
bam, and you're gone. It looks like you've ran the route, and you're right. Backpedaling, turning.
Right.
So,
wow, that's dope, man. That's dope. That's dope. Sir. Last question for you, Rondé. True or false? Florida State, Virginia, Charlottesville, Warwick Dunn scored. True or false?
You know,
honest, honest, unbiased. Right, answer.
Right.
True or false? Thursday night football, Virginia have, they got the blue jerseys, white pants, Florida State, white jerseys, gold pants, Thursday night football, Lee Corso and the crew calling the game.
Oh my God.
Warwick Dunn score. True or false?
Brian, I was looking at your jersey over your left shoulder right there saying,
yep.
Man, I hope he asked me a Florida State question.
Yeah,
you know what? So, Let me church this story up a little bit. So
let's hear it.
Warwick and I, you know, we got drafted the same year here, right? In 1997. And prior to that, him and Tiki were like co-offensive players of the year or whatever. So we had kind of had this relationship, right? So we come here, we're staying at the Homewood Suites or something. That's where they put the rookies at. And Warwick bought a house, and I was building a house that was taking forever. And we move out of, he moves out of Homewood, and he's like, hey man, you want to live with me? I was like, yeah, I'll come crash with you. We lived on, we slept on air mattresses for 8 months, dude. It was awesome. It's awesome. But I've had this conversation. So that being said, I've had this conversation maybe 100,000 times with Warwick, and he claims he scored. And I say, you would have scored, true answer here, Brian, you would have scored if you hadn't have fumbled the football.
Going down, when he was going
down.
Go look at it.
Adrian Burnham was a freshman safety who had to come into that game because Paul London, our starting safety, got hurt. And he dove in right as Warwick was going to the goal line and touched the ball out.
Yeah.
Promise you.
He still scored, Rondé.
No, he did not score.
You guys were mad because Florida State was running the ACC.
Oh,
and
my God.
It was all in cahoots.
Were
that was the only way.
Oh, y'all were unbeatable.
I can tell you this much, though. Your defense was loaded. Poindexter was one of my favorite defenders. I used to love watching.
It's a damn shame he blew his knee out, too.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, they had James Ferrier on that team, right?
Yep, Potsy, James
Ferrier. Yes, sir.
Jamie Sharper was on that. We had another guy who was a first round draft pick of the Eagles. He didn't really pan out. His name was John Harris. He was like this 6'8" defensive lineman. He ended up being a first round draft pick. Skeet Jones, I think he got a couple of snaps. There was another middle linebacker that ended up playing in the league. But yeah, we had a lot, man. Percy Ellsworth. Was our starting safety that year. Played for the Giants.
Yeah, I had a team with Loden. But Pat P, we all know Dunn scored. You don't want to say he won't be able to go back to Charlottesville if he said the truth, but it's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay. Hey, but Rondé, man, appreciate you joining us. Appreciate you joining us, man. One of the all-time greats, man. Super Bowl champion, 5-time Pro Bowler, 5-time All-Pro. And we're going to speak this into existence right now. Soon to be. Hall of Famer.
Love it.
Rondé Barber, man, joining us here. All Things Covered, man. Thank you. Thank you for joining us.
I appreciate y'all having me, man. Y'all do good stuff, man. Y'all keep this going. Yes. This is good.
Yes, appreciate it.
Greetings, Fantasy Warriors. I'm Heath Cummings, your guide to fantasy dominance on FFT Dynasty. Join me this offseason where mock drafts become epic showdowns and every pick shapes your legacy.
If I was Adam, with the team that he's built, Will Levis makes so much more sense.
And that's not all. We're peeling back the curtain on the future with our exclusive 2024 NFL Draft Prospect Profiles. Uncover hidden gems that'll elevate your roster to legendary status.
Puka Nacua. After Cooper Kupp, we really have no idea who's going to get the targets.
Keaton Mitchell of East Carolina. Explosive speed is ridiculous.
This isn't just a podcast. It's a playbook for champions. Subscribe to FFT Dynasty now, and together we'll conquer the fantasy football frontier. Your dynasty journey starts here.